Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program Martha Moody. Welcome back, Marty.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Marty, I'm so excited about your new book. This is a very different book for you, isn't it?
Yes. I'm afraid so, yes.
I think our listeners who are familiar with you know you for a, I hate to say a certain kind of book, but kind of a different genre, perhaps.
Right. My publisher, I'd learned kind of from someone else that my market was upmarket women's fiction. They considered that my genre. So they didn't want this book, but at any rate.
And that is Riverhead Books. And your new book was just published by Ohio University Press, and it's called Sharp and Dangerous Virtues, and it's set in the not-too-distant future in an area very familiar to most of our listeners.
Yes, it's set in Dayton and north of Dayton.
Where did this come from? Is this the one that was sitting in the drawer all those years?
I've been working on it off and on since 98. So it was actually out of the drawer a fair amount, but in just various incarnations and working on it in between other projects and thinking about it, and it's been a very long-term project.
And I saw a questionnaire that your publicist included in the book, and you had some very interesting information in here, like how you decided which characters were going to make it.
Oh, well, it's a book set in 2047 in Dayton and around Dayton. And there's been a dedicated agricultural area made north of the city, big. That's there's a line in there roughly the size and shape of a 9x12 casserole. And it's across Ohio, western Ohio, Indiana, and part of Illinois. And this was set up because of food and water shortages and starvation in the country. And it's worked. It's been a very successful project, but at the same time, the people who live there, who are left there to run it, have become very kind of cohesive and set apart from the rest of the country. And now there's a multinational force that's coming in from Cleveland and may attack the grid. So it's kind of about what people in Dayton will do. And since it's a war book, one of the things I noticed with things I read that a lot of times you would read a book and you'd know from the get-go who was going to die. And I think if the author planned ahead, this is my theory, if the author plans ahead who's going to die, they may get kind of attached and may put a little sentimentalism or something, a little bit muchness for the characters that are going to die. They're often the heroic characters that die. Or the particular poignant characters that die. So I didn't want to know who was going to die in my book because war is random, as I understand it. I've never been in a war, but I understand that it's random. So I put the names of all the characters in a bag when I was about halfway through the book. And I have four sons, and I had my sons each pull out some characters. And initially, I thought they'd pull out the characters who would die. And then I thought, oh, maybe that'd give them a complex. So I had them pull out the characters that would survive. And the characters that were left in the bag, I knew in the second half of the book that they would succumb.
My guest is Martha Moody. Her new novel is Sharp and Dangerous Virtues. And we get quite a history lesson reading this. I understand that one of your primary resources was a book by Mark Bernstein called Grand Eccentrics. He was on this program for that book when it came out.
It's a terrific book. I really like it. Yeah. And he talks about all these Dayton inventors and people, and they're just fascinating characters.
And the mouthpiece for most of this information in the book is a professor at UD.
Right. Right. I needed a way to get the history in without, I didn't want to write little history sections. So I had, this guy's name is Chad. So I had Chad give a course about the history of Dayton. And I quote from some of his lectures. And even as enrollment in the school goes down and the whole city becomes very, people start to leave. I had him keep going with the course at home with his family because it's kind of a way for him to keep going to tell the stories because he really wants to stay. He has a belief in the city no matter what happens.
And as they stay in their home and they see their neighbors one by one leaving the area, you create this eerie sort of atmosphere where you've got feral dogs roaming the streets, and it's really kind of Twilight Zone-ish.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. I don't think it's impossible. I mean, I think the setup is kind of preposterous, but things do fall apart, and I think we don't think about that here. And I don't know. I think we probably should because things do fall apart everywhere.
Let's talk about some of your main characters here. My favorite is the Dayton Commissioner of Water.
Oh, Lila. Yeah, Lila's the Dayton Water Commissioner, and she's probably in her 50s. She had been a very powerful woman. She had encouraged Dayton has a really good aquifer, and she had encouraged a lot of conservation of water, and she'd been a very well-known public figure. Then she'd left the water department, and then she'd come back, and she's kind of lost her power. She's lesbian. She doesn't have a partner. She's lonesome, and she just is kind of trying to find her place in the world, and she's very drawn to the grid. Where these people live, they call themselves Agridians, and they live in these planned communities that are based on 1950s small American towns, and they have very little contact with the outside world. And she gets the idea that she could be Agridian and wants to go up there, and it's hard for her.
And the grid, the people in this area, because we go inside the grid. She visits the grid.
She visits the grid.
And she is attracted to it for who knows what reason, but she's attracted to it, and she wants to be inside the grid. And they don't let people come in from the outside. This is a very difficult place to enter. And the people in there are weird. They've got their own religion and stuff, don't they?
Right. The grid's been, when the book starts, it's been there for 12 years and then 13 years. And they're very isolated, and they want to be isolated. And they have their own customs. They don't trust outsiders. They feel to some extent that they are being used because they produce this tremendously successful agricultural area, and it's fed the rest of the country. And so they feel kind of resentful about that. The rest of the country doesn't totally trust the Gridians. The Gridians, there's, you know, rumors that maybe the Gridians will try to break off from America. And I got the idea for the grid. I don't remember exactly how I got the idea for the grid, but one of the major things was I had early in my career worked in a satellite office, a satellite medical office. I'm retired as a physician. And there, when you're by yourself and running your own little venture and it's successful, I used to literally carry the checks and the money and the insurance receipts from my little office over to the main office daily. And it was so interesting. I felt like I was really being used, and I made a small percentage of the money that I brought in. And it was just a very interesting phenomenon. And it wasn't even the money so much as that I felt like I wasn't getting the respect that I deserved. And later on, I saw it in other medical practices, too, and this satellite office phenomenon. So I thought of the grid as a big satellite office. And, you know, satellite offices can be dangerous. They can try to sabotage the main office, or they can try to get away, to break away. They can set up their own whatever. So I just... That was, and they can be very cohesive. I mean, the people in the satellite office may be, very proud of themselves and very happy with their own situation and kind of wrapped up with each other and not want to interact with the people from the main office. Mm. So that was where that came from.
Martha Moody joins us. Her new novel is Sharp and Dangerous Virtues. You have a very tragic character named Turo Simpkins.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to give away too much about Turo, but Turo ends up interacting with the big general coming in from Cleveland or from Canada or wherever come from.
Right. Turo, at the beginning of the book, Turo finds a boy's body. He's a church custodian, and he finds the body of a boy in his church. And not a boy. He doesn't know the boy, but it turns out that the boy is this general Nainoneni's grandson, and Turo decides that he's cleared of having had anything to do with the murder of this boy, but he decides he really needs to talk to Nainoneni and explain himself to Nainoneni. And he makes his way to Nainoneni with really a lot of faith that if he presents himself to him, he'll be treated fairly. And that's not what happens. He was a tough character because I liked him so much, and he's really a good man. And it's hard to write about good people because they can be boring. And also, it hurts so much to hurt them. And it hurt to write about some of the things happening to him. He doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, the section where he's living in Cleveland and he develops this relationship with an elderly woman that lives nearby.
Mm-hmm.
This is really heart-crunching stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, thank you. I mean, he's...
No, really.
He doesn't have an easy time of it. And, I care about him. I sort of think about him. I suppose of all the characters, he's the one that kind of is still with me the most.
He's kind of a pawn, isn't he?
Yeah, he gets used. Mm. And ultimately, he has to sort of say he's going to refuse to be used. And I think that happens to real people. And I think sometimes it happens to good people because they really can't see that other people might be using them or might want to use them.
Was it really fun for you to do something so completely different?
In a way, it was fun. In a way, it was. I remember at times sitting, I write in, my husband's in my bedroom, sitting there feeling like my brain was steaming. It was a lot of work. and I look back over and think, how did I think that up? And I don't know. But in many ways, it was fun. I really and truly wrote it for my sons because I didn't know if it would ever get published. My first agent, who then retired, had taken it shortly after my first novel was published to my editor at the time at Riverhead. She's left Riverhead since then. And she said, oh, you know, there's some really good parts in this book, but it's not your genre, and you should not be doing this. And, you know, I'm not sure if she actually said, you should not be doing this. I'm not sure if she really said that, but in my memory, she said that. I got that feeling from her, and that kind of made me more determined to do it. And I thought, even this is a big book, it's big thematically, it's risky, even if it's a total failure and never gets published, or if I feel like artistically it's not a failure, but I can't get a publisher for it, whatever happens, you know, I'm going to take this book, this manuscript, and put it in the back of my closet, and I'll be there for my kids when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I want them to know that I attempted this and that I think there are things in there that I think are as much as I know about the world, and I want them to have that. So, I mean, to get it published ultimately is really very exciting because I didn't know if it ever would be.
My email conversations with publicists in New York are always interesting. I am booking. You had three books that came out on Riverhead, an imprint out of New York, and I had an email conversation recently because I've been doing some Riverhead books recently, mm-hmm. and I've got another one I'm working on, and I was corresponding with a publicist, and this publicist just happens to be from Oakwood originally.
Oh, really?
And I wrote her, and I said, oh, by the way, I'm interviewing a very well-known author today from Dayton who has had a number of books on Riverhead, and she writes back, Martha Moody, I love Best Friends. I mean, she knew exactly who I was talking about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of these other books, okay?
Sure.
Best Friends, first time you were on this program was for
right,
that book.
Right.
That book just keeps on chugging along, doesn't
it? It does. Yeah. Yeah, I still get royalty checks for it. It just keeps going. Yeah. So that's that was a fun book to write, and that was a big thrill to get it published. My husband said the other day, "Did you ever imagine you'd have four books out?" And I kind of thought, "Huh, four books? How'd that happen?" Yeah, kind of amazing. So.
And that book was inspired by a friendship, a very deep friendship.
Right, right. And actually, the latest book, Sharp and Dangerous Virtues, Jill, my best friend, my old college roommate who lives in Phoenix, she'd read a very early version of Sharp and Dangerous Virtues. And she, more than anybody, pushed me to keep writing and keep, well, I finished it, but then subsequently she would, you know, say, "Oh, what about, are you sending that to the publisher? When are you, with each book that came out, well, have you given them Sharp and Dangerous Virtues again?" I did give them Sharp and Dangerous Virtues again, and they still didn't want it. But, you know, she really pushed me, and she'd say, "Oh, I always think of that, and I think of the grid," and I think, well, you know, if she thinks that that's, maybe it is publishable. So, and then my new agent worked on getting it published, so that mm-hmm. was very positive.
And a little while ago, you talked about working in a doctor's office, and your next book is about
right,
stuff
it's about,
in a doctor's office.
It's a small, yeah. And Best Friends is... structurally, it's over many years. It's across the country. It's set in L.A. and Ohio, and two women who are best friends, college roommates, very different. And I wanted to write about a real small enclosed area. So there are five people in a doctor's office, which is actually based on the little offices just north of the Dayton Mall, just across the road from the Dayton Mall. And they're in this little reconverted ranch house. And it's very much kind of a hothouse environment. And these five people work together and in certain ways know each other well and in certain ways don't know each other at all. And it's it ultimately is a fairly tragic book. And when I read it over, I remember reading it over after it was published, thinking, geez, I didn't know I had that much grief in me. Uh-huh. But it didn't sell very well.
And that,
people don't like to read these
That is stories. The Office of Desire.
That's the Office of Desire.
And then the next book, Sometimes Mine, it has a little tragedy in it too, but it's a story of an affair between a doctor in Ohio and a basketball coach in West Virginia.
Right. Yeah, and it's a very long-term affair, and they see each other once a week. The cardiologist is very busy. She's very isolated from the world in many ways, just in her work. And Mick, in his way, is isolated from the world in his work. And they're together every Thursday night for 11 years, and then he gets sick. And she deals with his family and his wife and his mortality. And I do think of that as my Peacenik book. And it's I've gotten a lot of good response on that.
I really like that story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's so believable.
Mm-hmm.
When you read it, you go, "Oh, I can't believe Marty had an affair with this basketball coach."
Yeah. Yeah, my poor husband. I have a good imagination. I have a very boring life and a good imagination.
I don't know. Your life doesn't sound that boring to me. We were chatting before you went on the air about your annual trip to Israel. You did some very interesting things.
Oh, yeah. Somehow, and this was, I don't know. I'd been to Israel after our third son's bar mitzvah, and I wanted to go back, and I went back, and I thought, well, if I want to go back, I want to do something useful. And I wrote a rabbi in the Galilee who does some interfaith things and said, you know, I teach fiction writing sometimes. And what interests me with that is people can talk about all sorts of things, touchy issues, and communicate. And it's fiction. And fiction, it gives enough distance. And so he said, well, you don't speak enough Hebrew to work in my particular area. And I've been working on Hebrew now for years, and hopefully I'm getting better. And but he said he set me up with a professor of English at an Arab college in Israel. And about 20% of Israel is Arab. And so he's at an Arab college in a town, city named Sakhnin. And I went over and taught there for a week and taught fiction and writing. And it went really, really well. And Jamal, the professor, and his wife, Dahlia, said, why don't you come back in the summer with some kids and teach kids in our village, teach them English. They're really eager to learn English, and they don't get to hear many native speakers. So last summer was the fifth summer of doing that. We're up to, we've had 10 to 12 volunteers the last 3 years, 200 to 300 kids in the English summer camp. We stay with host families. The last 2 years, group here has brought over 6 to 8 students from their middle school students and stayed with host families. It's a really good project. It's a lot of work. It's more complicated than I ever dreamed it would be. There are cross-cultural issues. There are language issues. There are many issues. But it somehow works out, and it's pretty cool. There are a lot of very wonderful moments and things that have come out of it.
Isn't that village really close to the Jordanian border?
It's close to the Lebanese border.
The Lebanese border.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's just inland from Akko and inland from Haifa and a little north of Haifa.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's been a really good experience. But, again, it's kind of funny because people say, oh, it's so nice and it's such a nice, peaceful thing to do. Well, it's complicated.
Uh-huh.
But that's – I mean, it makes you realize that working for – peaceful things is not easy.
No.
Which is kind of good to know.
Mm-hmm. Martha Moody joins us. Her new book is Sharp and Dangerous Virtues. And I see you have some events coming up to roll out the book. You've got something that sounds very interesting coming up on Thursday, December 6th, the Dayton Cultural and Arts and Book Fair. What's
yeah.
going on there?
This is part of the what formerly called the Dayton Jewish Book Fair. And now it's the Cultural Arts and Book Fair, I don't know, by the Jewish Federation, sponsored by the Jewish Federation or something. But there's a novelist from Michigan coming down. Her name's Eileen Pollack, and she's written a novel called Breaking and Entering, which it deals with kind of people that have moved to small town Michigan and dealing with political and social issues there together with an affair. And there's a lot of intersections of life, personal life and society there, which is what is a lot of what's in Sharp and Dangerous Virtues, you know, how people are affected by bigger events around them. So we're going to have a conversation, I hope, about fiction and I think it's titled The Reality of Fiction, or because I do think there's some issues that are almost easier to discuss in fiction than they are to discuss just sitting down or in nonfiction venues.
So there will be an audience, and the two of you will be having a conversation about your work. And
yes,
about
with a moderator, and then hopefully we'll get some questions and input from the audience. So I'm excited about that one. I think it'll be interesting. I hope.
And that is Thursday, December 6th. That's the Dayton Cultural and Arts and Book Fair.
Yeah.
You also have something coming up in January, Saturday, January 12th at 2 o'clock. You'll be giving a talk and doing a signing at that gem in Oakwood, the Wright Memorial Public Library on Far Hills Avenue.
Right.
And I see another one. You're going to be at the Dayton Metro Library on Saturday, January 26th.
Yes.
2 o'clock.
Yes.
The big library on East 3rd Street.
Yes.
Exciting.
Yes, I'm excited about it. I'm excited.
Well, this is such a Dayton-centric book. I mean, we've got these characters who live at the Allwood Audubon Nature Center.
Yeah.
This was a cute little sideline you did there.
Yes, nobody at Allwood knows about that. I guess maybe they'll hear about it now. Yeah, they're up by the grid, and they are very isolated. It's a couple that become a couple while they're there, and they kind of want to keep their own little world up there. And things happen.
Well, I'm trying to picture the grid on the map, and I'm thinking, okay, I know they bulldozed and demolished all these towns and
right.
created new towns in this grid. And I'm wondering, we're here in Yellow Springs, you know, what side of the border are we on in this?
You know, it's really interesting because I sort of envisioned Yellow Springs still being intact, but that's a very good point.
Well, I was just curious.
Yeah, since it's so directly east, I imagined it being intact, not attacked, but yeah.
And we have these sharp and dangerous virtues that we need to get clear to the end of the book to figure out what that means, don't we?
Mm-hmm. There's a book by a woman named Nancy Farmer. She writes young adult fiction. And she wrote a book called House of the Scorpion, which I think is great. I love that book. And it's a young man who is isolated in this land, which is between Mexico and Arizona. It's set in the future, and it's kind of a basic big drug manufacturing area, growing and manufacturing area. And he comes to realize, not to be too much of a spoiler, he is the clone of the drug lord who heads everything up here in that area. And he's been created as a clone to be a potential organ donor. And, you know, all the sort of things that make this drug lord a successful drug lord, his tenacity and his ambition and his toughness and his big visions, are things that can be used to be a drug lord or can be used by this boy to get out and make a new life for himself. So that book really, I thought she did that so well, showing that these things that can really be trouble can also really be used for very positive things. And they are dangerous sometimes. You know, they have to be used for the right reason.
Mm. Well, I've got to say that when I was reading the book, there are certain moments where I said to myself, wow, that was violent, or whew, I wasn't expecting that to happen. And it's not a real overly violent book, but it does have its moments.
It has its moments. Mm-hmm. It has its moments.
Were those parts difficult for you to write?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, there are times I would get, my palms would get kind of sweaty and stuff. You know, it's not... My old writing professor, my third son is at Oberlin, and my old writing professor's up there, and he'd read the book, and he told my son it was very, very dark. And I was kind of sad to hear that, because I don't think of it as being, I mean, it is dark, mm-hmm. but it's such a mixture. And I think our life is such a mixture.
Yeah.
It's just, you can't deny the darkness and the violence of it, and you can't deny the lightness and the wonder of it. It's all mixed together.
The book is Sharp and Dangerous Virtues. It's the new novel by Martha Moody. We really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your interview. You always ask good questions.
Thanks. You've been listening to Book Nook on WYSO. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Tune in next week when my guest will be Mark Levinson. His book is The Great A&P and the Struggle for Small Business in America. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.